So we are living in turbulent times. People on both sides of the aisle attacking each other, and President Trump after yesterday's news conference, allies realigning after the president's NATO trip. But 50 years ago, things were arguably even more divided. Photographer Harry Benson famously said 1968 was the year America had a nervous breakdown. He was there at the assassination of Robert Kennedy. Martin Luther King Jr. was also gunned down. The earlier civil rights movement exploded into the anti-war movement and a general counterculture uprising. In France, Soixante Huitards, 68ers, students and workers, almost toppled the government. There were protests in Germany and the Prague Spring. Political upheaval. But 68 was personal as well. The FBI took time out from spying on anti-war demonstrators to report that women had broken rules at the University of New Orleans by wearing slacks. Historian Richard Vinen, professor at King's College London, tackles all of this in his book, 1968, Radical Protest and Its Enemies. Richard, start us off, the U.S., Britain, France, Germany. What was behind the protests?
Well, a kind of combination of things. So, first of all, there's simply a lot of young people around in 1968 because, at least in Britain, France and the United States, there's been a baby boom after the Second World War. So there's a big expansion of the number of university students that sometimes produces pressure on university facilities. There are specific kind of global issues. So obviously opposition to the Vietnam War, very important in America, spreads to other countries, although in a curious way, because lots of these other countries are not either involved in the Vietnam War themselves, or in the case of France, the French head of state, Charles de Gaulle, is actually an opponent of American policy in Vietnam, but nonetheless, students in France do mobilize around Vietnam. As you've mentioned, the civil rights movement in the United States is very important. So race plays very much into the American 68. I think in Europe, class is probably more of a dimension. There's more of a kind of Marxist feel to 1968, and particularly in France and Italy, there's a link up between workers and students in a way that you very conspicuously don't see in the USA.
Well, there's also a split, workers and students, very often in other countries, but in particular in the USA, do not line up, even though their interests might line up. I mean, you famously have construction workers beating up anti-war protesters. And what was that quote? I don't think we can fully use the quote because of the language, but one of the leading protesters says, "I don't care if years from now those workers need a 10-cent raise or something like that, I am not going to help them."
"I'll cross their picket line if they keep talking about burn Hanoi, not our flag," I think is the quote. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think American workers are complicated in 1968 because obviously a lot of them, I think, are against the anti-Vietnam protests, which doesn't necessarily mean they're in favor of the Vietnam War, because after all, it's largely their sons who are dying in Vietnam. But I think the kind of flamboyance, theatricality, countercultural nature of student protest often alienates the American working classes. And also, of course, you're getting an ethnic split in America with part of the northern white working class beginning to move politically rightwards. So I think in that way, 68 fits in with a kind of realignment of the working class, which then goes with people voting first for Nixon, later right. for Reagan, who, of course, is a great anti-68 figure, and I suppose in some ways now for Trump.
Well, and let's go back even further, because this is another seed of the protests in 68, sort of a split on a view of a post-World War II America. To one generation, they had fought the greatest evil ever. If they had survived, it was time to enjoy the fruits of that. And you saw suburbs spring up and consumerism and sort of that 50s, everybody put on a lampshade and dance on New Year's Eve. For their children in the 60s, their children rejected that.
I think that's true. The Students for Democratic Society and their kind of really foundational document talk about, you know, having been raised in affluent comfort as if that's almost not a good thing. I think in Europe, things are a bit different, partly because, especially in continental Europe, people are less affluent. And also, I think the Second World War has a different kind of relationship to post-war history. So in the United States, I think there's a sense that the wartime generation is sharply cut off from what comes later on. In places like France and Italy, and of course, very much in West Germany, even people born after the war or during the war who can't remember it, it still very much feeds into their lives. So Daniel Cohen-Bendit, French student leader, is born in 1945. He actually claims he's conceived on the day of the Allied landings in Normandy because his parents get so excited. But his parents are German Jewish refugees hiding in France. So for a man like that, the Second World War can never be something that's just in the past.
Stay with Daniel Cohn-Bendit and tell us more about him. And also, what was then fueling the protests in France? I mean, yes, the workers' protests. Millions went on a memorable strike. But why were students taking to the streets? Why did they hate de Gaulle so much? What were they against?
De Gaulle's been in power for 10 years. De Gaulle is in his late 70s by now. So in some ways, he stands for a kind of established authoritarianism, I suppose. So I think there's this sense of kind of, desire for rupture with the past. But the events in 68 are still quite a surprise. So France begins that year thinking, I think, as far as the government is concerned, that they're going to get off quite lightly. And then there's this sudden explosion in May, which is produced initially by a kind of breakdown of the universities, and then by the workers, very much, I think, to people's surprise, joining in with the students and kind of rallying behind their cause. Yeah. And also by this extraordinary kind of impresario, Cohn-Bendit, who's 23 years old. He's not very ideological. He's not someone who's preoccupied by kind of abstract ideas of the left in a way that a lot of people in France are. But he's a tremendous performer, a joker.
So he's one of the names. There are others, Tom Hayden here in the U.S. that you concentrate on. But you seem to conclude that overall, 1968, for all of its, convulsive nature, didn't have that much of an impact. As you mentioned, Nixon was elected, Reagan after that, Thatcher came into power in Britain, which had a much more subdued kind of, it seemed that Britain put most of its seething rage and anger into people like John Cleese and into satire. But overall, you say, didn't really have the impact that it might have. And I've found myself thinking, really, it, birthed the environmental movement, the women's movement, the gay rights movement. You could be a young woman going off to college in 1968 with your little circle pin on your nice little skirt outfit, and you'd come home at Thanksgiving in your Army-Navy store combat boots. I mean, it was a huge change for so many people. Why did you come to that conclusion?
No, I think you're right, and I've expressed myself badly if I imply that it had no long-term effects. To some extent, they're things that come out of 68 rather than being part of 68, if you see what I mean. I think sometimes, especially the women's movement, almost defines itself as a reaction against the kind of left-wing, leather-jacketed, clenched-fist machismo of male left in 1968.
You talk about a leader, and I'm going to be careful here too, of the Students for a Democratic Society, who told his male comrades, cement relations with working-class men by fill in the blank, a chick together. There was a macho nature to it.
There was. And I think there's a kind of rethinking afterwards. So obviously there's a big rebellion against that from women themselves. Although I think also, in fairness, men like Tom Hayden and Cohn-Bendit, both by the time they kind of come to write their autobiographical works, talk to former companions of them, to women they'd lived with, Tom Hayden to his former wife, and sort of except that there's a need for a new kind of dialogue between men and women. So I think there's a big cultural, social impact of 68, which in some ways runs alongside politics without necessarily being directly tied in with kind of electoral politics.
Well, and we should note, there were swaths of all of these countries we've talked about who didn't participate at all, who were against what was happening. You point out that there were often more people at anti-protest gatherings than at protests. But there's no question, a war was ended.
I think it certainly was one of the things that pushed the Vietnam War towards a conclusion. I think it is also important to say that there's a way in which 68 operates precisely by provoking kinds of counter-revolution. So as you said, there are important demonstrations of people who are against left-wing protest. And there are ways in which I think this helps redefine the right, because parts of the right begin to think of itself as a kind of anti-68-ish right.
And there are many on the right who will draw a line straight back to 68. But question for you, do you think it's possible to have that kind of what seemed to be percolating up from the ground movement ever again, given that we're learning, for instance, in your own country, the Brexit movement was infiltrated by Russian operatives, and there was fake news, and there were, do you see that kind of just a natural, organic moment in time again?
It's hard to know. So Cohn-Bendit was asked about a repetition of 68 now. Cohn-Bendit, of course, now is a man in his 70s, I suppose. And Kern Bennett was asked about the kind of relationship and differences between 2018 and 1968. And he said two things which I thought were very interesting. One of which is he said, well, in 1968, no one asked us about 1918. And the second thing he said was that the key to his generation is that they weren't frightened of the future. And he felt that young people now are frightened of the future. And a lot of young people's protest now is quite kind of defensive protest designed to stop things happening rather than to make things happen.
Hmm. We have left so much out. The Black Panthers comes to mind, but you have not, Richard Vinen. It is in your new book, 1968, Radical Protest and Its Enemies. It is a deep dive. Professor Richard, thank you so much.
Thank you.